at Noom, Noom.com.
WMNF 88.52.
First of all, that what you are doing is monumental. And this is not easy. And you all are literally, with this show, you have literally created something out of nothing. And everybody can't do that. What I think is so unique about you all is that when I'm listening to you all, because there are things that I don't know about your world, you all have a wholly different kind of conversation. You have no ideas what your conversation feels like to my ears. It's so different. Because I don't have the opportunity and hear how you guys philosophize about reality. This is the only place that I get that in my entire life. What you do is significant because I'm not alone in it. A whole lot of folks over 40 years of age don't have that experience. Their kids are out of the house and grown. When I think of you all as giving us a perspective on popular culture. Not just what's happening, because Entertainment Tonight will tell us what's happening, but you are also giving us perspective on how it impacts real people's lives. And that's the qualitative difference in what you're doing.
You're about to listen to the Urban Cafe.
Buenos dias, Tampa Bay.
Good morning, Tampa.
All right, all right. Good morning, Tampa. This is your host, Joshua. You're listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. I'm back after a one-week respite, and we got new booms in the studio. It's looking pretty sharp here. We got a full studio and a lot to talk about, so this is great. Let's start off with Joe holding down the board.
Hey, good morning. Good morning.
All right, Claire.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. Hope you have a great day. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
That's right. Is it today officially?
Today.
Yes. All right. Jay.
That's why I got the green on.
Oh, nice.
I can't get pinched, man. That hurts.
I know. Oh, I don't have green.
I'm not familiar with that corporal abuse. What's that about? If you don't wear green, you get pinched?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I
you
was
never heard of that?
No. Dude, I grew up in Puerto Rico. There's
I have no,
no
idea where that came from. but I grew up hearing that, right?
I have, yeah.
I'm wearing
yeah.
green, too.
Peace, love, and justice. Nice. What's up?
Hey, what's up? Nestor, your brother in peace, love, and justice. Good morning.
And then we have now going to be a regular co-host on a recurring basis. Ooh, Nicole. Yeah.
Hello, hello.
Driving in all the way over from Pinellas County into the city of Tampa here on MLK, where we're located. Thank you, Nicole, for being here today. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and actually, and so those of you who are, we got Facebook Live going on. Claire is holding down the Facebook Live. You can also call us at 813-239-9663. It's funny, the Spectrum News, Bay News 9, has got the Chicago River is being dyed green for St. Patty's Day, as well as the city of Tampa. Yep. Hillsborough River is being dyed green for the events, which I hear is just a lot of Guinness and
a lot of singing,
yeah, a lot of kilts. If you're celebrating St. Patty's Day, have a safe one. Please use Uber, Lyft, or any of those ride sharings. Don't drive drunk. Please know your limits. That's
or better yet, find someone who
a DD.
Yeah, whether you're cool with them or they want to be part of the festivities, that helps you out as well.
That does help you out. And I'd be remiss, we actually have our phone screener. Juliet is holding down the phone call screening today. Thank you, Juliet, for being here. Our intern from University of South Florida, who's very close to graduating. So
yeah, she is.
We're going to have a little fiesta for her when that happens.
That'd be great.
All right. So, tons to talk about. I just want to do, you know, real quick, what happened in New Zealand. They just found one more body last night, I believe. So that makes the total to 50 people who have been murdered, assassinated. As well as, I believe there was like 48 injured or something like that. And it's just, you know, this happens in the United States all the time. In New Zealand, it does not happen. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the person was deranged. Go, Claire.
I did some, we knew we were going to talk about this, and I did some research. It was saying that there's a big increase in Canada, United States, and Europe. Violence against Muslims. Mm-hmm. You know, just the overall world is getting more mm-hmm. brazen about identifying these people and
taking it out on them.
Yeah. You know?
It was interesting that the main perpetrator who's now been arrested, he left a manifesto, as most of them do. I think it was like 80 pages long and just some diatribe, but one of the things he cited was how he was inspired by the assassination in South Carolina in the Emanuel Church. And so that's one of the things that inspired him to do what he did. And he said in his manifesto that, and I'm abbreviating here, but long story short, he is not against Muslims. He's against the immigration of Muslims into New Zealand and Australia. And he was an Australian, actually. I mean, he made that clear. He wasn't even a New Zealand citizen. But he wanted to go to New Zealand and perpetrate this horrendous act to show the world that nowhere is safe. Ooh. So just completely deranged, right? And so, and we, you know, maybe a month ago now, almost 2 months ago, we talked briefly how Australia had a mass murder, and they immediately decided to enact very stringent gun laws. And they actually had a gun buyback, and the entire country basically the country of Australia per se. They don't have widespread guns like they do in other countries. New Zealand does not have that, but then the Prime Minister has vowed to change those laws as a result of what happened.
Yeah, that's like that study that I pulled up that was done where it showed that the number of murders, you know, like mass murders in countries where they don't have a lot of guns, particularly like assault rifles, whether there's a ban on them, buyback programs or whatnot, they don't have as many mass murders compared to the United States. Like the numbers were just, it was a huge...
It's a huge difference,
It's a huge difference.
Yeah.
It was like an obvious correlation.
But like Japan is one of those countries.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so now there's even talk. So Remington, it was an automatic Remington rifle that was used. And so there's talk about suing Remington for allowing them.
Now, automatic or semi-automatic?
To be honest, I'm not an expert, so I don't know. But it was a Remington branded rifle. And so...
Because we know the difference, like automatic, semi-automatic. Like if you see like in a movie an automatic, it's like, wow. Like that can... Oh, my.
That's what they use in war.
Yeah, that's how exactly. You get so many.
And I think that's part of the conversation nonstop, where Remington is selling this to civilians when it's really meant for military and police forces, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, at least that's what people are saying. It should be the part of the conversation. And so we've already got a caller this morning, calling in. So Antonio is calling us from Tampa. Antonio, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thank you. Just working already. Just a quick, have you guys watched Border Patrol on Netflix?
I do not personally.
I don't either.
I haven't, but I'll check it out.
Yeah.
Man, let me tell you something. It is extremely hard to get into other countries from other countries. I mean, hard. They check everything. They check if you have the right amount of money, depending on the amount of time that you're going to stay, who you're visiting. They can check your phones. So for this guy to go from Australia to New Zealand to have access to weapons and to be able to pull this off, it might run a little deeper. I'm not trying to get into conspiracy theories and whatnot, but it had to be very well planned. Because I'm telling you, if you watch this show, it is nearly impossible to get into other countries. I mean, they're bad.
Oh, real quick, Antonio, this is Jamal. I wanted to ask you. So that show, Border Patrol, just a quick overview without saying too much. Does that talk about particularly border matters in other countries?
Yes, man. You can't go forget that the Canada and New Zealand and Greenland and all these countries. It's rough, man.
Right.
I didn't know how hard it was. They got these machines that can find traces of drugs on your luggage and on your clothes. They'll know if you had contact with just about anything. And if you had contact with anything, you're not getting in.
And so we'll have to check that out. But, you know, that goes back to the larger conversation about immigration. In this case, Australia and New Zealand, they're basically sister countries. And so, you know, maybe their immigration laws are a little more lax and their visa granting. I'm not quite sure if they even require visas to go between the two countries. But, yeah, you bring up a great point, Antonio. And so we'll have to discuss that further and get some experts here on immigration to discuss that. I appreciate your call this morning.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate you. Thank you.
No, man. Thank you. Thank you. And Antonio, again, you can call us at 813-239-9663. You listen to the Urban Cafe. So I just wanted to get that out there. You know, the New Zealand situation is just absolutely horrendous. Again, that happens here in this country all too often as well. And I think we're at a point where we really just need to we need to face the facts. I mean, we have a hard reality that we need to face, either in the electoral ballot, through amendments, or, you know, laws. We'll have to figure out what needs to be done, but this cannot continue to happen. And so with that, I'm going to switch up real quick. So we had a mayoral election here in the city of Tampa recently, and so no candidate got above 50%, so there is now a runoff. So that means that Castor, Jane Castor, and Davis Straz, which were the two highest vote getters.
I was Castor got like 48.5 and Straz got like 14 point something. Yeah. I thought, wow,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so it wasn't even that close, but he's the next highest.
This is the runoff.
I saw Nessa, you were shaking your head over there.
You know, I'm struggling, and so I did a show on the elections 2 weeks ago, and before the elections, it was the day before the elections, and we did a show. We had Elton from Organized Florida, and they're on the ground knocking on doors trying to get out the vote. We also did an interview with our supervisor of elections that talked about the importance of getting out the vote. And, you know, there were lots of us just pushing, get out there and vote. And the turnout was 20%.
Wow.
20%.
That's
48,000 people in the city of Tampa.
There was a time and day.
That's horrendous.
It was about 5 o'clock in the USF precinct. It was 14 people out of like 25.
Right, I heard that. But, you know, unfortunately, that's been the statistic for years nationwide. We don't get, for some reason, people don't realize that their vote, especially on the local level, affects them. It affects their housing, their transportation, their taxes, all kinds of things. But they're busy? Yep. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
They don't realize.
So that's, for me, the most frustrating thing. And if we know that's been a problem, then we need to change it, right? If we can't get people to come out and vote on a random Tuesday in March, then we really need to reconsider what that looks like for our municipal elections.
I have been in all the women's marches, and after one of the high school shootings, when all the students nationwide rose up and they all started, they're like, 16-year-olds can register to vote. They can't vote till they're 18, but
I feel like there's a politician out there right now trying to push for that, trying to push for 16-year-olds to be
interesting.
Able to vote.
Well, they got involved. They created a nationwide movement,
right.
And
that's
they started to learn about the importance of voting. I haven't heard about that movement in a while. What happened to that? You know,
yeah,
we got to keep that stirred up.
Sorry, I just want to do a sidebar real quick on exactly what Claire is saying. See, that's what happens when things are so chaotic in our political system. Things are so chaotic just across the board. News changes so quickly that when people jump on something, even Parkland, for example, people were all about, you know, gun safety and we have to have measures in place and legislation that would support our young people, at least in the schools and all that other stuff. And people were advocating and marching and championing. And I'm not saying there aren't people still doing that, but because the news cycle is so chaotic, because there's some new story out there that literally will come the week after, and then all of these things wash away. So we get excited in the front end, and then some major thing comes out, and we lose sight of that. Sorry, that was
me
diverting.
No, in the conversation,
super frustrating.
Very timely. Birch Bay, who was a former Indiana U.S. senator, passed away on Thursday at the age of 91. He was actually the senator who put forth the bill in the U.S. Senate back in the 70s to move the voting age from 21 to 18, because all these gentlemen and ladies were going to Vietnam and serving their country, and they weren't even able to vote. And he thought that was wrong, so he was the one who actually introduced the law that eventually became law of the land to have 18 the age of voting. And so you know, rest in peace, Senator Birch.
Absolutely.
And so also you know, in talking about you know, electoral reform, just real quick, so the House Democrats' first bill was called For the People Act, and it had three major sections. And one of those sections was actually to create a national voting day holiday.
Mm-hmm. As it should.
As it should. And it, I vote for that.
Yeah, it overwhelmingly passed. Obviously, you know, mostly on party lines, though. And so it's going to go. And then, but of course, McConnell in the Senate said that he's not even going to bring it to a vote. And which which I don't even know how that works. I don't know how is it that it can pass the House and then not even go up for vote in the Senate.
He controls the Senate. Yeah. So unless it passes through him, so no bill will make it to the floor unless it goes through
him. But the national emergency ones, they had 18 days to do. I don't know if it's because it's related to National Emergency Act.
So they have to address it.
But these other ones, he doesn't have to.
So whatever he wants to see on the floor. And that's the crazy thing about both the House and the Senate. Unless it goes through the Speaker, you know, or the President of the Senate, which in our case would be Vice President, but it doesn't get there because Mitch McConnell, he is the Senate...
Senate Majority Leader,
yes,
I believe.
There it is. So it has to go through him. Yeah. Everything gets filtered through him.
Are we in a position because people didn't go out to vote for the... Well, they can still come out to vote for the mayoral election.
Yeah, and let's toss out some dates real quick. So the early voting starts April 14th mm-hmm. for round two.
People can still register to vote.
Correct. And the actual election day is April 23rd.
April 23rd. Right.
And so, and again, there's two, Jane Castor and David Straz are the runoff.
And then there's still there are a couple of runoffs with city council as well.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
And you can still register your current location where you live.
Your current address?
Vote.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's
do
good
it now so you can vote on the 14th.
Right. I think I want to say it means like March 25th or 28th. I'm not sure, but it's on the Supervisor of Elections website. I'll pull that up. But real quick, because if we continue the trend to not go out to vote, are we in the potential in the state of Trump to get a mayor to come in and be like, look, the president's just doing whatever he wants to do? I'm in here. And it's
and what
they just do. They, like, what if we get like a Trump of a mayor where they're just doing all kind of stuff to the city? Like, oh, forget
that'd be
that
good.
City
I think we should build a wall around Tampa.
This mayoral ordinance, executive, whatever order, I don't know what they have. So,
instead of a presidential executive order, you mean like a mayoral executive order?
Yeah, I mean, just what if it gets wild out here in Tampa? Like, what do you do?
Tampa's predominantly.
Do you get the mayor out of here?
I don't know. Impeach the mayor?
Or do we have not that? Or do you think we don't have to worry about that with the two candidates that we have?
I personally don't think we have to worry about that with the two candidates we have. They're mostly moderate progressives. So
that's a bit far. But I wouldn't go that far with either one of them, truthfully. I mean, but that's a real concern, right? We have to worry about our politics. Our democracy as a whole is changing.
Yeah.
And the way we do things is changing because we are so polarized, because we are so partisan in our politics. So people are getting into office and they're trying to change things up to make it work for them.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying anything about Jane Castor and David Straz. Yes, I am. I'm just kidding. I'm just saying. I would want that for any of our candidates, any of the candidates that are running for any office. I feel like we need to make sure that we hold them accountable.
Yeah.
Right. We need to make sure that they're not doing things that disenfranchise communities, or that, especially with what we're doing with transportation, especially what we're doing with affordable housing and all those other things that have real serious implications on our communities.
But there's also serious limitations, right? The city council is a limitation on whatever the Hillsborough County Commission is a limitation.
Yeah, we have checks and balances.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's also, you know, talking about the 2020 presidential elections, that's also, say a Democrat ends up winning the presidential election, you're still most likely going to have a Republican Senate. And so how much can that person get done outside of issuing executive orders, which is ultimately what President Obama had to do. Mm-hmm. And now a lot of his executive orders are being rescinded by the current president. Yeah. And so, you know, it's every 4-8 years, things are just going to keep on turning. I mean, that's no way for society to live.
At extremes, right?
Yeah, because, super extremes.
Because in 2020, when 45 is no longer in office, somebody's going to come in there
that's just like your opinion,
house. Man. No. Yeah. That's my opinion.
The one thing I like about the some of the mayoral elections are the non-party affiliations. And, you know, I think having the two-party system really gets us to where we are now, especially as it gets more and more polarized. I'd love to see either bipartisan tickets or going on non-party affiliation voting.
Bipartisan tickets would be amazing.
Yeah, it would be. So we have a caller who wants to talk about the mayoral race, and then after that we're going to jump to a break, and then we're going to talk about a very something that came up in the news that affects a lot of us. And so Terry calling in from Tampa. Good morning, Terry.
Hey, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to be able to respond.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for calling the Urban Cafe. And what do you have to say this morning?
Well, first of all, you were speaking very broadly about the event that happened in New Zealand, and my response to that would be that there are a lot of people that are sitting around right here, right now in this area that are aware of things that are possibly about to happen, and people with violent tendencies, and they say nothing and do nothing, and that leads directly into my second comment about the mayor. You know, you got Jane Casper, who has a record of working within the police department, and the record for the Tampa Police Department concerning minorities is a very bad one. I mean, we had the people on bicycles. We had kids getting shot and ran over into bridges. And we want to translate that into the civilian portion of our government at this time. I'm not so sure of that. And so, you know, when you have people in positions that if you didn't hear her speaking up then, why would she speak up now? Would there be more of the same? And Mr. Stratton has been more of a philanthropist. And being free with his money and helping to make the community grow with his efforts. And you can sort of measure the two and see that there's one difference, that we're getting more of the same, and the other is that we're getting some of what we need. And again, I go back to that New Zealand incident. There's a lot of racist events happening around this country, and people need to speak up or you're part of the problem. Just like with Nazi Germany, those who went along got exactly what they deserve. You know, a racist, dictatorial society that almost ruined the world, and we're heading in the same direction, and we don't speak up. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Oh, and is he still there? Okay, Terry, this is Jamal. I got a quick question for you. You sound like you've been a campaigning for quite some time. Between the two mayoral candidates, who do you think will be better in regards to affordable housing and the displacement of people, poor people, particularly in the city? Because I think that's a war that, I hate to say a war, but that's something that's going to occur as downtown continues to build and spread and gentrification continues. Which mayoral candidate?
Obviously, sir, you can see one of those candidates is going to be more of the same. They're from, you know, the same power structure that's been wrecking the city for the last 30 years. You know, keeping the city divided and destroyed because certain communities are being tore up for this so-called development, and downtown is being turned into a rich people's paradise where, you know, the average person can't even live. And so we have to look at those things. And who's been supporting that? You know, the local arms of bureaucracy, the police department. And they've been sweeping up and crowding the homeless into little garrisoned areas where they're kept out of place and out of sight, but they're still there, and it's a growing problem. And I think Mr. Spraz would be more likely a person that would have a sympathetic, empathetic approach versus a disciplinarian, draconian approach.
Okay, thank you very much. That's what I've been thinking and preaching for a while here, so appreciate
it. Terry, thank you very much for your comments here this morning, for providing us your opinion on the mayoral election and the event occurring in New Zealand. And more importantly, thank you for listening to the Urban Cafe this morning and calling in. We really appreciate it. So with that being said, we're going to jump to a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about the college bribery scandal.
Oh, showtime.
What's there to talk about?
Nothing.
Yeah. Money. Previously on the Urban Cafe.
Cigarette is a drug. It's flat out. It's a drug. When it's processed in a stimulant, anything that's stimulant becomes a drug and becomes a disease to the body. once you make it singular. You keep it whole, the body know how to use it. Mm-hmm. Before you make it singular and you process it, it becomes a drug to the body. Mm-hmm. But they know, if I give you salt, it's going to make you crave sugar. If I give you sugar, it's going to make you crave salt. Mm-hmm. That's why they put them both as cigarettes. But we would just focus on nicotine, but they don't focus on the sugar that's in cigarettes and stuff like that that make people addicted.
Oh, there's sugar in cigarettes?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, they put everything in cigarettes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's what makes people addicted to it. But I wanted to say to you that I had one of my clients has MS. Well, he had MS. For 15 years, he came to me. We've been working together for almost a year now. And last month, he got an MRI on his brain. And the MRI showed no signs of MS no more. I said, the issue is nobody find out the cause. We got to go back to find out. And each person have a different cause. And most of them is due to heavy metals like aluminum, mercury, and things like that. He is with some mercury from fillings he had in his mouth. I had him get out all those mercuries. Then I have packages, herbal packages I put together that help repair nerves and strengthen them back. So he's able to now stand. He's just been in his wheelchair for the last, I think, 7 years. He's able to stand. He now can have movement with his hands again. So basically, the brain, every cell in our body died and reborn again. So no matter what happens, if you change what you put in your mouth, you can change whatever disease that came upon your body.
Hi, this is Angela B. We're back again. The March 23rd Caribbean Cruise Music Festival takes place at Skipper Smokehouse, Saturday, March the 23rd. Live bands include Impulse, Renegade, Jafar Rai, Trinity 7, Sucker Boys, Spy vs. Spy, Terry Edwards and the Latin Jazz Band, Tassa Drums, African Dancers, Bickley Rivera and Nelson with Island Chill.
Everybody wondering what the world's coming to.
Ghana, Renegade, Gia, Wayne Stutter, Soka Van, The Man, DJ Spice will be our DJ. See you there, on the 23rd of March, 2019, at Skipper's Smokehouse. The doors open at 3 p.m. For more information, go online to WMNF.org or call us here at 813-238-8001.
Support for WMNF comes from our members at the Florida Law Group, protecting the rights of the wrongly injured since 1984. The Florida Law Group is dedicated to creating strong and lasting connections with their clients and our community. More at thefloridalawgroup.com.
WMNF's record and CD sale. Amazing deals. Don't miss out. Snag the album of your dreams at a way cheap price. This sale will blow your mind. Most CDs and LPs will be priced at $2.
All purchases are as is and are final. Parking is limited. Carpooling and alternative transportation is suggested.
WMNF's big record and CD sale. Saturday, April 27th. Be there.
Welcome back.
I love making Clara smile.
I like to hear Josh sing.
So, bienvenidos a Café Urbano.
Yeah.
And so, you listen to the Urban Café on WMNF 88.5, your last local radio community station. Love working here and love working with this crew. You can call us at 813-239-9663. This is Josh, your host. And we're going to jump into something there, you know, and Nestor alluded to this, you know, that the news cycle is just absolutely crazy. But we thought that we'd talk about something that really isn't politically related right now. It's really about society.
I mean, but it's inequality. Got political implications.
It does have political implications, but it's really about society and inequality and, you know, the capitalism.
Yep.
It definitely has to do with capitalism. And so what we're going to talk about is the college bribery scandal. And it's been all over the news. It's been all over late night. And so it's just a little bit of everywhere. I think it's one of the few things the president has not tweeted about, actually, to my understanding. Yes, correct. And so how did this all start? It actually started, the Wall Street Journal reported on this first, and they stated that the, and I'm going to quote here from one of their articles, the tipster who led federal authorities to the biggest college admissions scam they have ever prosecuted was Maury Tobin, a Los Angeles financial executive who was being investigated in a securities fraud case, according to a person familiar with the investigation. Mr. Tobin was being questioned in an alleged pump-and-dump investment scheme in which people conspired to inflate the price of stock so they can sell it at a profit, when he offered a tip to federal authorities in an effort to obtain lenience, according to the person they were interviewed. And so what this ended up happening was he said that, hey, somebody approached me, a Yale coach approached me, and now I'm going to flip over to a different source, the Portland Herald. The executive told Boston authorities chasing down the market manipulation scheme that the women's soccer coach at Yale said he would label the executive's daughter as a recruit in exchange for cash. Investigators recorded a meeting between the executive and the coach at a Boston hotel room in April 2018. During that meeting, which was described in the court documents, authorities say that the coach, Rudy Meredith, told the father he could help his daughter get into Yale for $450,000. Meredith accepted immediately in that meeting in April 2018, $2,000 cash in the hotel room, and then gave the executive directions on how to wire the rest of the money. And then that's when the federal authorities started their investigation into the college bribery scandal. At the time, they obviously had no clue how big it was going to be. And so that, and what's crazy to me is that it started off as an SEC investigation, which is probably still continuing, and then a completely separated investigation. And then now it led to these charges against, I believe, 50 people were arrested or something like that, right? And so there's lots to talk about here. I'm going to continue pointing out some of the facts of the case throughout the rest of our conversation this morning. But I want to circle back to my colleagues, the rest of my crew here. Let's start with Nicole. Nicole, I know you have a lot to talk about regarding this.
Yeah, you know, it's, as I was thinking about this, it parcels down to the haves and the have-nots. And there are so many different systems in our nation that, you know, benefit from that, whether it's the criminal justice system, lending, tax codes. But schools have been dealing with this for the longest time, and not just colleges, all the way down to grade schools and preschools. It's just unfathomable to me that, you know, I guess there are two ways of doing it. The old-fashioned way was to buy a building at the school, and then you could earn admission. The one thing about that is everyone at the school benefits from that donation, where in this scandal, you're not getting that. You know, it's that one particular child that's benefiting, or the people that are getting the money. So that would be the biggest, you know, thing that really bothers me.
I hear that.
Yeah, and I saw, and again, I'm not really on social media, but I know that, you know, and there was a lot of people involved, but, you know, the one that's come out the most is obviously Lori Loughlin from Full House, Aunt Becky, I think is what her name is.
Aunt
Becky. And so her daughter, both of her daughters actually were admitted using this bribery scandal into University of Southern California, the Trojans. And so there was videos of her daughter when she was a senior in high school about to go to college saying, I don't care about studying. I'm paraphrasing.
I care about the partying.
Yeah, yeah. And it just kills me. There's these underprivileged kids who all they want is a degree from USC.
Yeah.
You know, they grew up in Compton or wherever it is in Southern California. They dream about becoming a Trojan, getting a degree from there. And then you have this girl literally out there posting on her social, you know, media that she doesn't care about the degree, and her parents paid $500,000 to get into the school.
Right.
It's just absolutely ridiculous to me.
It's just making me all think about the validity of these prestigious schools. I mean, their credibility is tampered with now.
I don't know about that, but is it the school's fault? You know, because the schools weren't in the know.
Schools for it,
well, I don't know. Well, there's a lot of things going on the higher Ivy League stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing, there was articles about how Harvard and Yale are teaching new business majors, you know. Some of the practices are not necessarily up and up the way that they used to be. I mean, things are changing.
And so more facts about the case. So at least 9 athletic coaches and 33 parents, many of them in prominent law, finance, fashion, food and beverage industry, and other fields, have been charged in the case, including, you know, the aforementioned Lori Loughlin, as well as, I don't know why she's called a Hollywood star, Felicity Huffman. I believe she was a reality TV star is what she was.
No, Desperate Housewives.
Desperate Housewives.
I was confusing it with something else.
Definitely a...
Yeah, she's a Hollywood star, yeah. Yep. And so, you know, maybe on the D list. But
well, interestingly enough, her husband, William H. Macy, has not been named in the case.
You know what? That is correct. And I love me some Macy, man. He's awesome.
You know what? And this is the funny thing. Like, as an attorney, when you see a federal versus a state charge, nothing against, you know, just the regular police and the state attorney. But, you know, they take on cases sometimes. They get dropped, dismissed, a good case back. Most times, if the feds bring a case, it's a situation, because I'm looking here at this, you know, and maybe people overpaid, because this no, they did, because I'm looking at this guy. It says this guy Gregory Abbott and his wife, they were charged with wire fraud. So this is like the other part to people may not talk about. It wasn't just the paying the schools, but this is a problem. It was setting up tests.
The SAT scores.
Yes, yeah. SAT and SAT. So pretty much this guy paid this company $50,000, and they pretty much, they corrected his daughter's answers as she completed the exam. On the ACT, she got a 35 out of 36. Then on the SAT, they paid $75,000. And on the math, she got an 800 out of 800 and a 710.
Wow.
I mean, I'm just saying overpaid, because with those scores, you could probably get into quite a few schools.
Yeah, but, you know, when you're going to pay that much for SAT scores and ACT, you're going to pay whatever you need to do to get that student in. So you're not going to rest your laurels on those two things.
Right.
I mean, how bad were your high school grades?
If you're all in, be all in.
High school was easy. But looking back now, high school is easy, bro. Kids are like finishing high school now.
But not if you don't care about school. Not if you don't care about school. This daughter posted.
Well, I don't care about college. Maybe you should have paid the high school to get the grades changed, because then that would have helped you out.
But to get into those schools, there's more and more competition, especially Ivy League and you know, these prominent schools. There, you have to have internships as a high schooler. You have to have all these extracurricular activities.
But some of these schools are not Ivy League schools. Like, this is, if it was like all the top schools, I mean, Josh went to Ohio State. His school is better than some of the schools on this list. I went to Michigan. My school is better than a lot of schools on this list. I mean, come on. Like, that's stupid to pay that much money if you can go this route. If I was a parent doing that, I would have got my kid in for a lot less.
Jamal's the wheel and the dealer.
I'm glad you're smart with your bribery. I'm good.
So, and of course, I'm going to tie this back to Florida. So, the state, not the university. And so, he has reported in Fox News, which, yes, I do read Fox News once in a while, a Florida man with a Harvard degree and excellent test-taking skills appeared to have the perfect pedigree for his job as director of college entrance exam preparations. The federal authorities revealed that Mark Riddle wielded his mastery of standardized tests to help prospective college students cheat on the aforementioned SAT and ACT. So he literally was the one taking the tests somehow. And, you know, because some of the people arrested were actually test proctors, right, who would allow people to take tests for someone else, which is against the whole, test-taking process.
I really have a problem with the test part. I
mean, we can talk about that in a second. So some more facts in the case here real quick. So prosecutors said that parents paid an admissions consultant to bribe coaches and administrators to falsely make their children look like star athletes to boost their chances of getting accepted. Some parents spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, as much as $6.5 million, to guarantee their children's admission. I remember seeing photos. There's apparently this one child, I think, was a star recruit for water polo. She had never played water polo in her life. And they had literally doctored pictures of their children playing these sports in high school as part of their college admission.
They're photoshopping their photos onto athletes.
No, in some cases, even more brazen. They literally sent pictures in the college admission of people who were not even their children. And so, like, they didn't even do the Photoshop. They just sent the picture of the water polo person without even that person being their daughter.
But you know what? It might have worked out for water polo, because if you don't make sport as a water polo, like, I'm thinking, you know, recruiting basketball, football, you know, my major sports management, like college basketball games, and I was in school, NFL games, like, there's scouts everywhere. People know once you can
nobody's
play.
Nobody's going to know the water polo
at the same time, you know, the reason why these big programs have all these problems and bribery and all this madness is because they make money. A lot of these small schools or big schools, these sports, like a water polo, they don't make money. They lose money.
No,
so they got to be supported.
It's
so
really basketball, football to make their money.
If someone's going to give you $300,000 or $400,000, maybe what do you care for water polo? You're like, okay, I can support my program.
So, so I have lots of opinions about all this. So I'm going to try to run through it quickly. Yeah.
Trying to stay still so, with all those opinions.
I will first start off by saying, if you want to hear more about what I'm proposing, check out something called Duality of Sorts. You can find it on Facebook and YouTube. We just posted our most recent video is about the college admission stuff, right? So there were a couple of takeaways, and this is my recap of this video. A couple of takeaways. One, why are people surprised that wealthy people are using that wealth, power, and privilege to their advantage? I love that it's out there because it causes us to talk about it. But why are people so surprised? You know, like, why is this so shocking? Sure, the amounts of money are shocking, and the brazenness by which they worked is absolutely deplorable and shocking. But at the end of the day, this is what power and privilege and access creates, mm-hmm. right? It creates this huge disparity, mm-hmm. no matter in what level, no matter in what industry, in what field, disparities exist.
And the thought that I'm not going to get caught.
Exactly. Like, hey, I'll just pay who I need to pay to do my thing, and it's never going to come back to me.
Have you ever heard of the Peter Principle?
I have not.
You rise to your level of incompetence.
Oh.
Because of who you know, not what you know.
Yep.
This is a perfect example of the Peter Principle.
Absolutely. So it's really about access and the people you know and all those things, right?
Yeah, they don't have the skills, but they're going to come out with a Harvard degree, and then somebody's going to hire them.
But it's been happening for years.
So,
centuries.
Oh,
yeah,
my goodness.
Centuries, absolutely, because it's about access. So why people are surprised, I don't know. And I will say this, I'm not necessarily passing judgment. Right, I'm not passing judgment because I think anybody with access, there are plenty of people without or with privilege that wouldn't do this. So I recognize that. But I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that people are using their privilege, wealth, and power mm-hmm. to get something for themselves and for their kids. So I'm not surprised by that. The other takeaway I had was that inequity in our college admissions, that is just a small picture of a bigger problem, right? Our education system is screwed up, and it starts from Head Start or pre-K, elementary, middle school, high school, all of those things. There are inequities in our education system for sure. And yes, why are we surprised? Did we think that it stopped at high school graduation?
Right.
No. Yeah, of course it doesn't.
We have a mental problem. Everybody thinks everybody should be trying to go to college, and that's not really the truth. People need to be finding a way to be useful to society.
Vocational schools. Skills.
But we lost a lot of our trades because of automation.
Yeah.
Well, but there's a balance. But now
there's a balance.
There's a balance. Like, so now that trade may have been lost, but now there's a trade in automation, right?
Yeah.
So learn how to maintain these robots, to speak, right?
Well, Nicole. We talk about inequity in schools and criminal justice. It'll be interesting to see what kind of punishment comes down on the people that have been named in
Absolutely.
This. Because you have parents of poor children who have been jailed for using an address to get them into a better
100%.
School. Yeah. And
exactly.
So, you know, here you have people spending hundreds of millions of dollars. What's going to happen to them?
To cheat their way into the system.
And you know what? Like, someone like Trump, I mean, in Trump's day and age, like, how could this happen to Trump? Because let's say Trump, he's probably thinking, oh, there's nothing really done wrong with this.
Because he benefited from the same access and power.
Right.
I mean, let's be clear here. We don't know if, Trump attended some major elite universities, and we don't know if he ever was part of something like this, right? We don't know if he was bribed his way into college.
Fair. There's no proof, but we can make the assumption based on the fact that he paid schools, or no, sorry, he threatened his high school. Right. He threatened his colleges. He threatened all of the school's test scores and all that other stuff.
To not reveal it.
So there's obvious. One could assume. One might assume that he's hiding something that will show. I would agree with that assumption, but based on the facts, we just don't know.
This is what I would assume. I would assume that the Donald Trump I know from television in multiple speeches would agree with this ideology and say, ah, what are they? That's not a problem. I'm sure he would tweet about it if he really, really wanted to. And what would people do about it?
And I'm sure people told him, do not tweet about it. Don't touch it.
Well,
don't
right, right. He doesn't care. Bad people tell him worse. Stuff like that all the time.
But you know what? True. You know what? The funny thing is, he think about all the advisors he has. So what if Trump has advisors and he's really not doing all the crazy stuff he wants to do? He's kind of like, you know, contained a little bit.
Yeah.
And what if he gets uncontained?
Dude, John Kelly couldn't contain him.
Yeah, no. I don't think there's any containing or controlling him. Yeah. I think there are advisors that will try to inform things, but at the end of the day, he's going to do it.
I will say this. He's probably upset right. that he's not part of the news cycle.
Right. You know, that's the book I want to read. I want to read a book in like maybe 20 years from one of Trump's advisors, to like all the stuff that the president... wanted to do, but didn't.
Or in like 2 years.
According to 2021.
I would love to see the restitution be them to make scholarships for kids, mm-hmm. underprivileged
Absolutely.
Kids. And, you know, really turn this negative into a positive.
Yep. Absolutely. So, I mean, there were definitely other takeaways that I had, but at the end of the day, it is about equity, right? It's about equity mm-hmm. in our college admission. And I'm not going to obviously take over the whole show. I will say, if you go to Duality of Sorts, we are proposing something to help bring equity back into the college admission process. I talked about it previously a few months ago, but it's a social resiliency score. And if you want to hear all about that, again, check mm-hmm. out Duality of Sorts.
Which is a take on the social media score conversation that we had regarding China.
Exactly.
And so, yeah. And Nicole, you wanted to say something?
Yeah. This is, you know, college admissions. We'll also be seeing some probably lawsuits coming out in college sports. You know, Will Wade was just suspended indefinitely for the FBI having a wiretape of him.
Who's that?
He's the basketball coach at LSU, head okay. basketball coach,
okay. mm-hmm.
for making or attempting to pay a recruit to come to or make a commitment mm-hmm. to LSU. Right. And I believe the FBI has been investigating other schools. Nothing has really come out about that yet. Mm-hmm. But from my, you know, I worked in athletic department for a few different major colleges. And what I've seen, the pressure on academic counselors to have professors change grades mm-hmm. or to retroactively add credits when a player fails. And, yeah. you know, Claire, you mentioned what's the validity of the piece of paper that people are going out with. And I really feel that, especially when you've got these athletes that, you know, aren't necessarily getting the same education or putting forth mm-hmm. the same effort, but mm-hmm. yet walking away with the same degree.
Yeah. And that is interesting. You know, when my freshman year at Ohio State, there is a star football player. He was a sophomore when I was a freshman, named Andy Katzimore. And the whole thing was that it came out the list of courses that he was taking. And because he wasn't going to be a junior, he was going to go to the NFL after that, his sophomore year. And so mm-hmm. he just coasted that his first semester of second year college is like golf. Mm-hmm. And some other courses like that, because he knew he didn't want to, he was going to be an NFL, going to the NFL draft the next semester. So he didn't, you know, so it's like making a mockery of the system, right?
Absolutely.
And there
was a football player at Illinois who was going to, I think, either be a junior or a senior, had two incompletes and had failed a class. So he needed 3 hours, but then when he didn't finish.
Two incompletes and failed a class.
Yeah. And then when he didn't finish the two incompletes, he then needed 9 hours. He had started the summer with an elective in animal sciences for 3 hours and literally was cleaning out pig pens and animal pens. And then when the two incompletes turned into failure, that 3-hour class was retroactively changed into a 9-hour class.
What?
And he got an A in the class that made him eligible to play the next season.
That's just ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
And it happens everywhere. I mean, that's University of Illinois, Ohio State. I'm sure you mentioned the LSU example.
Yeah.
And for me, I know Nestor and Jamal think the same way probably, that it's, you know, here we are busting our butts, right? You
Absolutely.
Know, I had two jobs most of my college career. And so, and just kind of, you know, making ends meet, trying to scrounge quarters for Hot Pockets, you know what I mean? So, you know, so I can go to class. And it just really, really upsets me about this whole conversation. Just really upsets me. And some more facts. This is, again, from the Portland Herald here. So I've talked about Mark Riddle, who the U.S. attorney, actually, the U.S. attorney Andrew Lelling said, quote, "He was just a really smart guy. He didn't have inside information about the answers. He was just smart enough to get a near-perfect score on demand or to calibrate the score." That's how smart this guy was, who was just taking these SATs and ACT tests for these kids.
Well, we talk about privilege, and how about the tests being skewed towards, you know, certain demographics? And it all sort of plays in together. Mm-hmm. Why was he so excellent at taking those tests?
That's right. Good point.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't know.
I mean, at the end of the day, we know the system is broken, right? We know that there are going to be certain people that benefit more than other people. And I feel like it's that inequity that I'm challenged by. If people that grow up with privilege and power and access, I'm not knocking them for using it. I feel like I'm more so knocking the system for allowing that to happen, right? So it really is about, we're never going to change people. We're never going to change people with privilege. They're always going to want to use it to their advantage, mm-hmm. right? No surprise there. What we need to do is fix the system. Mm-hmm. And the system has been broken for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. How dare you suggest that?
But a lot of people that talk about privilege are the same people that are knocking affirmative action, that are knocking
100%.
Title IX.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Saying that
exactly.
affirmative action is no longer needed, right?
Right,
and
exactly.
So, yeah, it's, or the reverse racism argument that's happening right now,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so some more facts about the case here. Again, Massachusetts U.S. Attorney Andrew Lelling said that the investigation is continuing and that authorities believe other parents were involved, in addition to the 33 they arrested. The IRS is also investigating some parents allegedly disguised bribes as charitable donations. So now they're looking at tax fraud as well.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so.
I can't
but you
wait
know what? I think about
person.
It like.
I hope we do get to see
if
it.
If you're a parent and you bribe to get your kid in school, like, before I do that, I might look at my kid like, okay, I'm not like you're an idiot or nothing, but like, look, I don't think college maybe is for you, and maybe you need
she's
a different
only
route.
6 months old. Give her a chance.
No, I'm saying like if your kid is not, it makes common sense, if your kid is not paying attention in high school, which is not that difficult if you pay attention
right.
to do decent in, if you really, really focus on it, then why are you paying for them? That's just not a good investment.
I gotta say, when I was in high school, and it was in the 70s, and I knew that the school system was broken while I walked around in the hallways of my high school, but we had, even though I was a college-bound student, you know, taking the college prep courses, I was also allowed to take the trade. Mm-hmm. I actually graduated as a tradesman, as a printer. But they don't offer those things anymore. You have to go, and that was in high school. That was like, they had enough of the trade services for the kids who they, you know, they would end up in agriculture or a tradesman, whatever. But they had enough programs to give the kid a taste of it to see mm-hmm. if that would be their fit. They don't do that.
Well, they do that in some schools, right?
Some schools.
There are some charter schools. Like, I know my son goes to Tampa Bay Tech. And at Tampa Bay Tech, they have lots of different industry options. You know, they have mechanic, they have shop, wood shop, and all that other stuff. So I know that those
that's
are...
That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. They
that
do
school.
That at Tech, specifically at that school. It is a mm-hmm. charter school. No, mm-hmm. magnet school, sorry.
Magnet.
It is a magnet school right now. But I know there are schools throughout Hillsborough County that do that.
And for those of you that's tuning in, you're listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. You can call us at 813-239-9663.
So I just want to reiterate what Nicole mentioned was I hope that when convictions come down to those people that have been bribing the system, using their privilege, power, and wealth to bribe the system, I hope when that comes down that it is equitable in terms of convictions to the women that are going to prison. And there are more than one case mm-hmm. like that. The people that are going to jail, getting arrested, going to jail, can't cover bond and bail and all that stuff. Well, they're in the system now because
Lester.
They're just trying to
hold
create
up, Lester. They're
a
using better the, they're using their privilege and power now.
But they have no privilege and power. They literally use like a cousin's address or a brother's address.
No. I'm saying if the people that have privilege and power have privilege and power,
Why don't you think they use their privilege
in the justice system?
And that's when we all need to rile up and say, for a thousand different reasons, this is wrong.
Well, and this, you know, this going back to the Manafort hearings, right? So Manafort's sentencing went down.
47 months.
He got 47 months and when he could have faced over a decade in jail because he had lived an otherwise blameless life, right? And so, again, talking about privilege and power, this man who had literally worked for some of the worst dictators in the world. Yeah. You know, and here he had lived a blameless life and got 47 months. Although he had a second sentencing, now he's facing up to, I think, 7 years now.
Yeah,
and he still has state. The same day the second sentencing came down, within minutes, 16 indictments came down by the state attorney of New York.
Right.
So he, even if he is, his federal sentencing is commuted either through presidential pardon or good behavior.